Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take on complex research and synthesize it into impactful knowledge tailored just for you.
Today, we are immersing ourselves in one of the most culturally rich and politically baffling nations on Earth. Modern Italy.
It's a fantastic topic because Italy really is this intense paradox. I mean, you have a founding member of the EU, a G7 nation, a global engine of style, art, and innovation.
Right.
And yet, it seems to be perpetually caught in these cycles of political instability, corruption scandals, and, you know, profound social division.
That is the core mystery we're trying to solve. How can a country be so immensely creative, so vibrant and resilient at a local level, but struggle so consistently with, well, the fundamentals of national governance?
Exactly. Our mission today is to move past the romanticized stereotypes, the stunning landscapes, the incredible food, and really examine the hard structural historical threads that explain this deep-seated friction.
We're going to trace it all the way from the country's birth to the rise of contemporary populism.
We are looking for that hidden history, those deep-seated, unresolved conflicts that, according to our source, really define contemporary Italian life.
Okay, let's unpack this structural analysis, and let's start with the scholar who's guiding us through this labyrinth.
Our guide is Anna Sento-Bull, who is a professor of Italian history and politics at the University of Bath. She brings decades of academic focus to 20th and 21st century Italian history.
And she specializes in some pretty contentious areas, right? Like political violence, memory.
Yes, memory and national identity.
That focus on conflict and identity feels key.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like she's not just interested in, you know, chronicling a timeline, but really dissecting why Italy's political foundations seem perpetually shaky.
Absolutely. What makes her perspective so distinctive is her interdisciplinary approach. She combines political science, sociology, and cultural history to analyze not just events, but the underlying historical architecture.
And the sources highlight that her unique lens is centered on this idea of memory.
That's vital for understanding Italy. Bull argues that national identity Italianita is shaped not just by historical events like fascism and the resistance, but by how those events are remembered.
And crucially, how those memories are contested by different political groups.
Exactly.
So if the nation hasn't really agreed on its own origin story, it makes perfect sense that the past is still so potently alive and, you know, divisive in political discourse today.
It's not just history. The past is actively a current political tool. And that contested history brings us to the core purpose of her work.
Which is?
To explain the intricate and contradictory nature of Italy from its mid-19th century unification right up to the present day. Bull is writing for anyone who wants to grasp why the nation seems to be stuck in a state of permanent transition.
So what's the single overarching argument that connects all these centuries of upheaval? What is she saying is the root cause of this structural instability?
Her central thesis is that Italy's contemporary instability is the product of four persistent, interconnected legacies. Basically, structural flaws that were baked into the system from the start.
Okay, what are they?
First, the original incomplete unification. Second, the unresolved trauma of fascism and the Civil War. Third, a corrupt political system rooted in clientelism. And finally, the enduring power of local identities over a fragile national one.
So these four factors act like fault lines that never fully settle. For you, the listener, the core insight to grasp today is this constant interplay of continuity and rupture.
It's like, think of it like a renovation project where you knock down a wall, but the original weak foundation is left untouched.
Good analogy.
Bull shows that moments of radical change or rupture, like the end of fascism or the collapse of the First Republic, often fail to alter the deep current of old problems.
Instead, those old problems just reemerge in new forms. They find new political vehicles. The challenge doesn't die. It just reconfigures itself.
Let's trace the historical trajectory now, starting with that flawed foundation. We begin with the unification, the Risorgimento, in the mid-19th century.
This is critical. Bull argues the unification was less a popular grassroots national movement and more a swift, top-down royal conquest led by the northern kingdom of Piedmont-Sardinia.
So it wasn't Italy uniting so much as one region taking over.
Exactly. And that sounds like a recipe for alienation right from the start. If the state is forced upon diverse regions rather than built by them, citizens are naturally going to distrust it.
Precisely. This top-down imposition created a centralized state that was immediately seen as distant and alien, especially in the South. This is what created the infamous North-South divide, la questione meridionale.
Characterized by profound economic disparity and cultural prejudice.
Right. And to make matters worse, new centralized policies like protective tariffs disproportionately harmed the agrarian South while protecting northern industries. It cemented that divide immediately.
And if the central government isn't legitimate or trustworthy, citizens find ways to bypass it. This is where clientelism patronage becomes the default operating system, isn't it?
Yes. Because the state lacked legitimacy, people relied on immediate tangible structures, family, the local region, powerful local figures.
Things they could actually see and trust.
Exactly. This practice of clientelism where politicians exchange favors, jobs, or contracts for loyalty and votes becomes the deeply embedded structural glue that holds politics together. It replaces rule of law with personal influence.
And this structural weakness created the vacuum that fascism was waiting to fill.
Yeah.
If we move into the ventennio, the 20 years of fascism, from 1922 to 1945, what did Mussolini's regime change about these problems?
Well, fascism arose directly from the failures of that liberal state. It tried to create a unified national identity through force. But Bull argues the critical, lasting legacy isn't the regime itself, it's the aftermath.
The failure to reconcile.
Yes. Italy never had a complete collective reckoning with this past, not like Germany did after 1945.
Wait, so is that memory conflict over the Civil War the reason why Italy has struggled so much longer than Germany to build a cohesive national narrative?
In part, yes. The trauma of the Civil War from 1943 to 1945 between fascists and the anti-fascist resistance left a deep, unresolved scar.
So instead of a unified national story,
Italy developed a divided memory where the heroic narrative of the resistance competes with a powerful, persistent, and often politically useful nostalgia for the fascist era.
So the past wasn't buried, it was just pushed under the carpet, ready to trip up the next generation. Which brings us to the First Republic from 1946 to 1992, the era of paradoxes.
This period is defined by stark contrasts. On one hand, you have the celebrated economic miracle, rapid industrialization, a consumer boom. I mean, Italy transforms into a leading global industrial power almost overnight.
But politically, that success masked a profound stasis, what the sources call blocked bipolarism.
The system was intentionally paralyzed. The Christian Democrats, the DC, held permanent power backed by the West and NATO for one reason.
To keep the massive Italian Communist Party, the PCI, out of government.
Exactly. And this failure to modernize the political system alongside the economy led directly to endemic inefficiency. And because power was never challenged, systemic corruption just became a way of life.
That inefficiency and corruption gave way to outright violence in the turbulent 1970s, the years of Led, the Uniti Piombo. This sounds like the state was tearing itself apart.
It was a decade of intense social conflict and political terrorism from both ideological extremes. You had left-wing groups, most famously the Red Brigades, aiming to violently overthrow the state.
But at the same time,
right-wing neo-fascist groups were implementing the strategy of tension, using indiscriminate bombings to create chaos and provoke an authoritarian crackdown.
And the traumatic watershed moment, which really proved the state was fundamentally unstable, was the 1978 kidnapping and murder of former Prime Minister Aldo Moro.
Moro was trying to broker a historic compromise between the DC and the communists. His murder was a direct assault on the very possibility of political reform.
And the final collapse came when?
2 decades later. The end of the Cold War removed the geopolitical justification for the DC's anti-communist rule.
And that coincided with the judicial investigations that exposed Tangentopoli, literally Bribesville.
The many Pewlite or Clean Hands investigations were the catalyst. They uncovered this vast systemic network of political corruption that completely delegitimized and destroyed the entire ruling class. Overnight, the First Republic was dead.
Leaving a catastrophic political vacuum.
A huge vacuum.
And into that vacuum steps the media tycoon who defines the Second Republic, Silvio Berlusconi, in 1994. Wait, were people initially welcoming him as a necessary disruptor? Was he the cause of the problem or a symptom of the vacuum?
That's a great question. He was definitely a symptom who became a cause. Bull highlights his dominance as a perfect manifestation of that continuity and rupture idea.
He filled the vacuum.
He filled it with personalized, media-driven, anti-establishment politics. He may have destroyed the old DC system, but he immediately built new forms of patronage, replacing the old clientelism with his own business empire.
And his immense conflicts of interest, owning Italy's largest media companies, became the new structural problem.
Absolutely. And the instability he represented paved the way for the newest wave of populism that we see today.
Right.
Bull charts the rise of forces that capitalize on the general disgust with the established class. You see the Northern League, the Lega, evolving dramatically under Matteo Salvini, transforming from a regional separatist party into a nationalist anti-immigrant movement.
And then the Five Star Movement.
And the emergence of the digitally organized five-star movement, the M5S, which successfully leveraged voter disillusionment to become a powerful, if often contradictory, force.
That brings us pretty much to the present. We've traced the history from that flawed 19th century unification right up to 21st century populism. Let's synthesize the so what of all this, the structural insights that explain Italy's current reality.
Okay, let's focus on the big ideas that define that Italian paradox. Let's start with the paradox of a strong society and a weak state.
This is the idea that local life is robust and functional, but national governance is always fragile.
Right. Loyalty in Italy is focused on immediate, tangible structures. Family, the local region, what they call campanilismo, that fierce pride in one's own bell tower.
Your local town.
Exactly. The formal state institutions, by contrast, are seen as distant, inefficient, and widely distrusted. This is why local economies can be vibrant, yet implementing coherent national policy is nearly impossible. Loyalty just stops at the regional border.
The second core theme is the one that really ties the whole book together. Continuity in the midst of rupture.
It's the essential thesis. Despite moments of massive political collapse, the fall of fascism, the destruction of the entire post-war party system, underlying structures like clientelism and the regional divides simply persist.
They don't die, they just find new political vehicles.
Right. Berlusconi's networks replaced the DCs. Salvini built his movement on old regional resentments repackaged as nationalism. It's a powerful reminder that true revolutions are rare.
And finally, we can't overlook the enduring importance of the North-South divide.
No, Bull argues this gap is the most significant ongoing failure of the Italian state-building project. The economic, cultural, and political disparity shapes everything.
And critically, the weakness of the central state in the South created the vacuum for organized crime.
For the mafia, the 'Ndrangheta, to fill the governance gap. They essentially act as an alternative, deeply entrenched patronage system.
Bull's arguments are distilled into some really powerful, quotable observations. I want to share three key ideas that truly summarize her findings. The first is about the unification itself.
Glad.
Bull observes that. The Italian state was constructed not on a foundation of popular consensus, but through a royal conquest that left deep scars of alienation, particularly in the South.
That one sentence connects the 19th century process directly to contemporary distrust of authority. That original structural flaw is still paying dividends in political instability 160 years later.
The second idea addresses that contested history. Italy has never undergone a complete and unified reckoning with its fascist past. Instead, it has nurtured a divided memory, allowing the ghost of Mussolini to be periodically resurrected in political discourse.
Which explains why current debates over history and monuments can erupt with such ferocity. If you can't agree on where you came from, you can't agree on where you're going. The past remains a live political weapon.
And the third idea offers a fascinating, almost pragmatic observation about Italian resilience. Italy remains a democracy that works despite itself, finding informal solutions to formal institutional problems.
That beautifully captures the essential Italian ingenuity, its frequent appearance of fragility, masks, and underlying adaptive ability.
So when the formal institutions fail,
which they often do, Italian society relies on those robust informal social networks, the family, and local ties to survive and thrive. It's a highly pragmatic, if messy, approach to national life.
Okay, so let's move to how we can apply this knowledge. For the intellectually curious listener, what does this understanding of Italian structural history offer us beyond, you know, just understanding Italy?
Well, first, Italy's experience provides an absolutely essential case study for understanding global populism.
How so?
Italy was an early adopter of the personalized, media-driven, anti-establishment politics that we later saw across the U.S. and Europe, from Berlusconi to the Five Star Movement.
So it's a bellwether.
It's a key case study. Studying how Italy handled voter disillusionment helps us understand the trajectory of similar movements elsewhere.
And the deep analysis of Berlusconi's dominance offers a critical lesson in critical media consumption.
Yes. Bull's work on his use of his media empire to build political power is a stark, concrete warning about the dangers of media ownership concentration. It's about the profound conflicts of interest that can arise when one person controls both the government and the primary source of information.
It forces us to question who owns the narrative in our own democracies.
Exactly. And finally, this knowledge provides a much more nuanced cultural and social understanding.
It gets you past the tourist cliches.
It does. Understanding the history explains the deep-rooted skepticism towards central bureaucracy, that fierce regional pride we discussed, and why family and local networks are often prioritized over distant national law. It leads to far more meaningful interactions and better analysis of Italian news.
What stands out to me the most, returning to that core thesis, is the concept of continuity and rupture. We often assume that these huge political collapses, like the Tangentopoli investigations, must lead to fundamental change.
Right, you'd think so.
But Bull powerfully demonstrates that the collapse merely created a new stage for old problems, like clientelism and regionalism, to perform under a different banner.
That is the essential lesson. My final takeaway is that Bull's analysis shows Italy's ultimate success lies not in its formal institutions, but in its adaptive capacity.
Its resilience.
It may be an imperfect democracy, but it is constantly inventing unique, often messy, but resilient solutions to its persistent structural problems. This makes Italy a true political laboratory that offers crucial lessons for every Western democracy facing fragmentation and instability today.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.